going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. East of the river in the District of Columbia is in transition. And tonight we're talking about that and all other things D.C. with Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray. The lines are open if you have a comment or a question with the former mayor and current Ward 7 Council Member, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHUR. FM. Councilmember Gray, thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold. I'm delighted to be here with you.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a couple of recent things first. The first thing I want to talk to you about is the issue concerning the Metro Police Department and the questions about this so-called This competition.
Absurd. That's what I call it. Absurd.
This competition for writing citations and arrests. There's been a call for a civilian complaint review board. What's your take on what Chief Ron Pavlik has said yesterday in a committee hearing?
Well, to me, the whole situation was absolutely absurd, and I indicated I was going to sign on with some of my colleagues to a sense of the council piece of legislation to say that we should have a complaint board to which people can turn. I mean, I don't know what would bring people to the point to think that there's something constructive to be served by having a competition among officers to see who can write the most citations, who can write the most tickets. It's absolutely ridiculous. We ought to be working to try to get people to obey the law, especially some of our young people who've been subject to some of the incredible antics of the Metro Police Department previously. We should be working, Harold, to be able to say, look, our job is to be able to uphold the law, of course, but our job is also to try to have people live in a lawful way, not a competition where the police officers are doing things that are completely inappropriate. To be able to bring, to be able to write more tickets that people will have to pay more for it. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
Are you concerned about, you know, the broader issue, not just here in the D.C. Metro, but just across the country about the relationship with police officers and members of the community, particularly communities of color, and just how this looks?
Well, I'm extremely concerned about it, and we've had these concerns for some time. We have been, you know, we've been working to invest money. I've worked with the Carl Racine, the Attorney General, to put money into the Cure the Streets program, which he established. We've been working with the Violence Interrupters, people who can help to create a different kind of relationship with law enforcement. You know, we've talked so much over the years about community policing, and for so many folks, it just has not been a reality. And frankly, short of having that as a reality, then we're just going to have this kind of negative kind of interaction with police officers on a continuous basis. And again, I've been very supportive and put money into the Violence Interrupters coming out of the Cure the Streets program. And the Office of Neighborhood Services and Engagement is another one that I'm very supportive of. We've got to be able to improve the relationships to the extent we can between so many of our young people especially and law enforcement at this stage. And frankly, if anything, it seems to have gotten worse.
Final question about this. Does this call into question Chief Pavlik's leadership?
Called into question his judgment, in my opinion. He's got to be able to create an environment among the force that he manages that really is going to understand what their role is, not to have a competition to try to generate, you know, some movie tickets or something like that for how many citations you can write. So, yeah, I walk away raising questions about his judgment and what is he conveying to the people who are part of the Metro Police Department at this point.
Let's talk a little bit about yesterday's go-go bill signing. On the surface, some people would say, hey, particularly if you're from here, some folks may say, well, big deal, because go-go has always been in the hearts of Washingtonians and transplanted Washingtonians. But is there any meat or money behind this to help continue the legacy of go-go, whether it be education or a museum or anything like that?
Well, I'm actually a huge go-go fan, Harold. I don't know if you remember this, but as mayor, Chuck Brown was a dear friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I put money into creating a memorial to him in Ward 5 off of Ewart Street, that we would always remember who Chuck is, because, people come and they go and they don't remember who Chuck Brown is, and we have had so many experiences like that. I just wanted people to know what this man did. He was a really nice man. He was a wonderful guy. And I created the memorial. We put a couple million dollars into building that memorial to him. So really this builds on the legacy of Chuck Brown, frankly, and I'm glad that we're doing it. I just hope that we know that there are certain populations of people who will, resonate, with go-go. I hope it becomes what we hope it will become, and that is the District of Columbia song. And the state of Columbia song, D.C. when we get to that point, which will come at some stage. But no, I'm a huge fan of go-go, and Chuck Brown created that. Chuck Brown created the beat. He created the music, put together Latin music with a variety of other tunes, and songs, and created a genre that will live forever if we have our way.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm talking to D.C.'s Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray. He is also a former mayor of the District of Columbia. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call again at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Olga, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Olga, go right ahead.
Yes,
please.
Hi, good evening. Good evening, Mr. Gray.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's always a pleasure, sir.
Absolutely.
I live in your neighborhood. I'm a Ward 7 resident.
Fantastic.
Even have my low tag out of your office. I've respected you over the years and grateful to know you as well.
Thank you, Olga. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. We've had a lot of vandalism in our neighborhood of late, and I'm hoping that you can talk with someone to increase the police in the Naylor Garden, Erie Street, Harris Road area.
I'm happy to do that. I work very closely with the Commander Habibullah of the 6th District, and we meet on a regular basis. We meet every couple of weeks to talk about issues. We just had a session in which we talked about how to deal with some of the vending, which is being done by some people without a license on Minnesota Avenue. So she's very open to working directly with us. She wants to work with people, which is exactly the important part of the job of a commander of a district. And again, I'll be happy to pursue, asking her to increase the number of patrols that we have coming through Erie Street, the Branch Avenue area, and down by Naylor Gardens.
Olga, thank you so much for your phone call. Councilmember Gray, one of the things that you wanted to talk about, and actually this is a very, very critical issue, not just for your ward, but more broadly what is happening in the District of Columbia. And you want to put an end to food deserts.
Absolutely.
East of the river. And you want more than, $320 million surplus in the city treasury to help provide that. How is that going to work specifically? Because you've been talking about this, since you were mayor, I would argue even before you were elected mayor.
Yeah. Well, what we're trying to do is to do exactly what you said, Harold, and that is to eliminate food deserts, places where we don't even have grocery stores that people can go to shop in. If you look at the data, go ward by ward, you will see some wards in the District of Columbia that have as many as 10 full-service grocery stores. Go east of the river, and you'll see a very different picture. What you will see is that we have, in Ward 7, we have two grocery stores that are available to people. Ward 8, we have one, a giant. In Ward 7, you have two Safeways, and again, in Ward 8, you have one giant. And what we're trying to do is improve that. We're trying to create a situation in which people recognize that they are respected, that they are viewed as very much a part of the landscape of the District of Columbia. And we shouldn't have to wait for, you know, so-called gentrification to come to be able to do things for people. That's what's happened in so many parts of the city, where some of these amenities have come. It's a doggone shame to have to call a grocery store an amenity, but that we've had to wait so long for opportunities like this to come because the population has changed. We should do this because this is the right thing to do. And we do have now, Harold, we have an opportunity that's available to us. I did a piece of legislation that said, you know what, the magic number is that we can get to having 60 days of operating cash on hand. And my bill said, here's what we'll do with it if we get 60 days. We'll put 50% of the excess of that over the 60 days. We'll put it into an affordable housing fund. And then the other half, the other 50%, will go into what we call a PAYGO fund. It's the PAYGO money that we have now available to be able to do this. And we should do this because it's the right thing to do. What it will do is, because we have sites, we have 9 sites that are included in the bill, 6 of which are in Ward 7 and 3 of which are in Ward 8. They are shovel ready to be able to move ahead to get this done. And we should build as many stores as we possibly can on those 9 sites. Again, we had Walmart that was supposed to come to the District of Columbia. They signed the leases. I was the mayor when they signed the leases, and then they backed out. They walked away.
Are you concerned about something like that happening again now? And what conversations, if any, have you had with our grocer providers for your plan?
Well, I've had some expressions of interest. Of course, you're always going to be concerned about if you put something into that kind of investment, what happens to the dollars. The first thing is that we won't issue any dollars to anybody on a permanent basis until we have signed agreements and some ability to recapture our money if that should happen. We also have a provision that's in the bill that says if a grocer signs on to do this and then leaves before 15 years have elapsed, that the grocer will then have to pay a pro rata share back to the District of Columbia for what we've invested in these grocery store opportunities.
Help me explain, and to our listeners also, some kind of fundamental things. Why should the District of Columbia pay a grocery store to come to a community? Is that standard practice as we've seen some of these grocery stores and other big box stores pop up in other parts of the city?
I don't think like the way we've done it. We're making the investments now because we consider ourselves to be a partner to folks in bringing quality of life growth and development to communities that otherwise might not be invested in at all. So we won't see this done in a lot of different places, but we have such deep gross food deserts in these areas, and it's not happening. It's not organically happening. Again, you know, I could go back and cite all the numbers of 10 in this ward and 7, 8 full grocery stores in these other wards, and then you go look at Ward 7 and Ward 8. I just don't believe that it's likely to happen unless and until we start to see population changes, and I don't want it to happen for that reason. It should happen because we should reward the people who are living there now to make sure we do everything we can to keep them there.
But and I think to the point that you just made, as Ward 7 and 8 continue to gentrify – just to put it plainly, do you have to have white folks in order to get big businesses to invest?
We shouldn't, Daryl. We shouldn't. And we can do something about that now. We've got the dollars available to be able to invest in creating stores that otherwise probably wouldn't exist until, again, the population changes and you have a different group of people there. We can't wait for that. We just can't do that. We have to do this now. We've got a lot of people who live in Ward 7 and Ward 8, too, who've lived there for many years. And why shouldn't they benefit from the prosperity of the city? You know, when I was a mayor, Harold, I was very proud of the fact that we worked to recreate a fund balance. The fund balance is just the reserves. When I left office, we had $1.789 billion in the bank. And now that is continuing to grow. We've continued with prosperity. It's time for us to give back to the people of the District of Columbia the dollars to meet the needs that they have every day. I hear from people all the time about the fact they can't find a grocery store that they want to go into. Sometimes they can't afford what's in the store, and they don't even like what's there in the first place if they go in there. You look at the Giant, you know, the Giant is now proliferated all over the District of Columbia. Safeway is all over D.C. We got Trader Joe's. We got Whole Foods. We got these stores that everybody ought to have the opportunity to benefit from, and that's what I'm trying to do, to serve the people who live in the areas where I live.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to D.C. Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk to Dora, calling from D.C., also Kathy, calling from D.C. Lines are still open. Please do not hang up. You will be able to hear the program. And by the way, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Inside segment in its entirety via podcast on our website, whur.com. Just click on shows and drop down to community to find the program you want to hear. Stay with us. We will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a bit. I'm Harold Fisher. Angela Stribling is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This discussion continues in about 15 seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking all things D.C. with Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kathy, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind? Kathy, are you there?
I'm there.
Go right ahead, please.
Thank you. Good evening and Happy New Year to all.
Thank you.
Council Member Gray, Kathy Henderson, thank you for your service to the District of Columbia.
Thank you.
You did an excellent job as mayor, and we stand behind you in all of your endeavors to improve the quality of life for citizens in Ward 7, where my daughter lives.
Thank you so much. And I know your daughter well, too, so I'm glad to hear from you.
Thank you. But I just wanted to share with you my thoughts, you know, on public safety and violence interrupters. First of all, you know, the police have a very difficult job, and we all need to embrace them. We have an excellent police department, and I think we need to work on adding even more improvement. In my community, the 5DO5 community, you know, we enjoy our relationship with the police. We have an excellent relationship with the police, and we believe that every resident, every community in the city should have a similar excellent relationship with the police. We hang out with them. We grill with them. We talk to them. You know, we enjoy their company. They are our neighbors. They are our friends.
Kathy, I hate to interrupt you. We've got a lot of folks on the line. If you have a question, please ask. If you have a point, go ahead and wrap up. I want to make sure I get as many people as I can. Please continue.
Okay. Violent interrupters are not the way to go. we are taking vulnerable individuals, and we're saying that they can do a job that the police can't do. That's the wrong way to go. And we're putting, you know, vulnerable people on the front lines. And unfortunately, we're going to have outcomes like Clarence Venable, who was a violence interrupter who was killed. We don't need that. We need to support the police. We don't need alternatives to policing. We need community policing, but the police are well-trained, and we need to get behind them. And finally, I've spoken to you about adding two citizen members to the 9-member use of force review board so that we can have more accountability from a citizen perspective. These are the types of initiatives that I think will help the community to feel even more comfortable with the police that serve and protect us.
Council member.
Well, Kathy, I appreciate your comment, as always, because you and I have worked well together for a long time. But we also have a lot of police officers who don't really either fully understand or appreciate the importance of community policing. I had in my office 3 members of the Fraternal Order of Police not long ago. And I asked them, I said, would you tell me exactly what to you means, what does community policing mean? And Kathy, you would have been surprised. I couldn't even get an answer, to my question of, what does it mean, and how do we operationalize this in our community so that people will feel better about the police than they do now? Because there's a lot of bad feelings about police at this stage. It's good for us to say we need to get people to respect the police, but there's a lot of people who have had bad experiences with police here and elsewhere. And if we can engage other people in the process of helping to interrupt, to use the term, interrupt the violent activity in which some people engage, then I think we'll be the better for it. Is that a substitute for police? No. But it's a different approach. It's an additional approach that we don't have now. And I want to see us continue to do that, Kathy.
Okay. Kathy, thank you so much for your comment and your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to D.C.'s Ward 7 council member and former mayor, Vincent Gray. Let's go to Dora, calling from D.C. Dora, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good day, all. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And good day to Vincent Gray.
Thank you.
Council member and ex-mayor. Vincent Gray, council member, I wanted to ask you, what was your take on the Bureau of Prisons reviewing bids for that 300-man halfway house to house prisoners, former prisoners, in the old Washington LGBTQ bar in Ward 7?
Well, I've certainly expressed my views. I don't believe that it's an appropriate thing to do. What we're still trying to get information on, Dora, is whether, in fact, that is the place that they're proposing to site it. I've talked to the owner of the building. He says that there are people who have been looking at it, developers who have been looking at it, but not for that purpose, to put in a halfway house. I am all in favor of doing everything we can to bring our folks back to the District of Columbia and giving them an opportunity to reenter the communities that they've lived in the past. But 300 people in the same place is just an awful lot of people. That's huge. You know, we have a program like that now in Hope Village, and there have been lots of complaints about that situation. And I think that's what the Bureau of Prisons is trying to do, is to try to find an alternative to that. I will work with the Bureau of Prisons to try to find an alternative to that. I just don't think putting 300 people in one place living there is going to be effective. If somebody wants to do something smaller, I'm more than happy to work with them.
Right, and I'm all for people coming back into the
Absolutely.
Community as well, but just why in Ward 7. One last question, council member. I wanted to see, what is anything being done with Minnesota Avenue, the McDonald's? You go in there, there's all sorts of activities, and the policeman in there, he sees it. I literally went in there one day to get some oatmeal. The policemen were at the door. Woman and a guy came in, stood at the door, did their transaction, and the police did nothing.
Well, that's not appropriate either, and I'm sure you feel the same way I do on that one. I'm very familiar with the Minnesota Avenue activities. As a matter of fact, we've had people out there sitting on the wall right in front of the McDonald's.
Correct.
I've gone out and sat on the wall myself with people just to talk to them about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
What I did do, Dora, was to get the Department of Behavioral Health to bring out their services van. They're out there now every day to make services available to people who may have a substance use problem or some other problem, because we wanted to try to make it as constructive as we possibly could, and I couldn't think of a more appropriate department to do this in the Department of Behavioral Health, which is now run by Dr. Barbara Bazron. She's been there almost a year, been back since to the city because she worked for me when I was the mayor. So I'm glad to have her back, and we're working hard now to bring services to people who need to have the opportunity to turn their life in a different direction than might be the case if somebody just tries to use, you know, police activity with them, which isn't ultimately going to work.
Dora, thank you so much for your question. And I want to follow up about this halfway house situation. To the best of your knowledge, what is the status? Because the original proposal what, 2 years ago was for Ward 5.
That was within the last year.
Yeah. And now this, as Dora is suggesting, the club is part of
the Eagle Club.
The Eagle Club is part of the consideration. What is the status right now?
Well, it's a great question you're asking, Harold. I don't think we could actually say with real certainty exactly what the situation is. I've talked to the owner who indicated that he bought the building in order to lease it to the folks who run the Eagle Club, and that he doesn't have any intention of doing anything but that. But at the same time, apparently somebody approached him wanting to study the possibility. Study for what is another question. But study the possibility of there being a development opportunity there, I guess. What is interesting also, Harold, is that we have had we have the Cedar Realty folks now own the East River Shopping Center, which is right off of Minnesota Avenue. It's right across the street from the site that we're talking about. And
the old McBride's used to be.
Yeah, that's right.
My age, but go, please, go right ahead.
Yeah. We remember McBride's,
yes,
don't we?
Yes, I do remember McBride's. Yes, go right ahead.
Anyway, they own that shopping center, East River Park Shopping Center, which frankly was it got started under Marshall Heights, which is a, you know, one point strong development corporation run by Lloyd Smith, who was a great leader for economic development in that part of the city. But Cedar Realty owns the property, East River, and they now have bought the strip across the street, which is right in front of the what's now the Eagle Club in this building we're talking about. And I really think, you go back to what we were just talking about, I really think that if we put the scale, the number of people that we're talking about in this one building, I think it's going to stymie the kind of development that we are hoping to bring. It's one of the things we want to do with Cedar Realty is to look at how can we bring a grocery store on a permanent basis into that shopping center, and we want to work with them to make that happen.
Dora, thank you so much again. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ray, calling from D.C., thanks for hanging in there. What's on your mind? Ray, are you there?
Who are we talking to, me?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
go right ahead.
Oh, great. All right. Now, hello, gentlemen. How y'all doing?
Just fine. Thank you. Go ahead.
Okay. I understand the bringing people back, the development. But I think first of all, this is not my statement, but not my question. But I think when we start talking about, development, we need to first concentrate on keeping people who are here. I'm talking about African-American people.
Yep.
But my comment is this. I'm a healthcare provider, and so that's my focus. Greater Southeast, United Medical Center. I see patients there. We need a hospital east of the river, period, bottom line. Hadley's gone. The only hospital close is Fort Washington Hospital. And Southern Maryland Hospital is about to leave and go further out, further north. There needs to be a hospital for the disadvantaged patients in that area, because Greater South United Medical Center is the only thing there, and that building needs to be more than renovated. It needs to be replaced.
Absolutely.
And no one's, I mean, we keep changing the name of it, but we're not changing the building.
I completely agree with you.
All this development, is wonderful. I mean, I don't like it because it's displacing people who are from here. Is moving us out. However, something needs to be done with that building.
Okay. Well, let me see what the council member has to say about that. Thank you so much, Ray. Yeah. Please go right ahead.
Ray, I completely agree with you. In fact, I've taken action on that. As mayor, I had $336 million in the bank, in the budget, to be able to build a new hospital. When I came back to the council, that's a whole another story in and of itself, and coming back to the council, the budget had been reduced down to $96 million. And I said to some people, you can't even build a hospital out of Lego blocks with what's left here. I have now worked, Ray, with my colleagues. We've gotten the amount now back up to $325.5 million, which is enough to build a new hospital. We've got a site for it at on the grounds of St. Elizabeth's, and there were bids put out to attract a partner. And George Washington University Hospital has been selected to actually run the new hospital. So you're absolutely on point. There needs to be a brand-new hospital. When the United Medical Center building was built, it was built back in 1965, 1966. It was opened as K. Fritz Memorial Hospital. Then it became
K. Fritz.
That's when it became the Greater Southeast Hospital right after that. So we've got the money, and we've got the plan in place to be able to get this done, and I hope you will work with us to try to create exactly what you talked about, a brand-new hospital that will be a part of a healthcare system. What I'm trying to create is not just a hospital, but to have urgent care centers to go with it. We got an organization that now has agreed. They just bought a building at Nanny Hill and Burroughs and Division Avenue to be able to open and operate an urgent care center. The Skyland Town Center is now being built, which is something I've been working on for quite some time. And they're going to include a medical services building there that will be a 130,000 square foot medical services building that will have lots of specialties that will be offered to people. And a lot of those doctors will probably practice at the new hospital also. We just got to get it done at this stage. I couldn't have put it better than you put it, Ray. We need it. People deserve it.
Ray, thank you so much for your comment and your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I want to talk to you about the issue that everyone seems to be concerned about, and that is affordable housing in the district. You have been here long enough to all of your life to see the change that has happened not only for the past 40 or 50 years, but the past 5 years. Mm-hmm. What can be done to preserve affordable housing in arguably the most expensive city in the nation to live?
You know, Harold, it's a great question that you raise, and I'm glad to respond to it as best I can at this stage. As mayor, I put the first $100 million into affordable housing, and that's now been continued on under this current administration. We've got to continue to make those kinds of investments, but we've got to make sure that as we recognize the investments being made, that it's got to buy down the cost of the rent, if they're rental properties, of the people who will move in there. And there are reduced rents for people who are moving into some of the housing that's being built. Some of it will have to be modernized housing, renovated housing, and the like. But people feel like they're being driven out of the District of Columbia at this stage. And not just D.C., but you see it in virtually every major city. You know, go to New York and look at Harlem at this stage. It looks like a very different place. Many of our major cities now are no longer home to people who have grown up there, whose families have grown up there, and they don't feel that they're welcome anymore. And not being welcome translates into they don't have the money to be able to pay for the housing that, is on the market.
Why do you believe that the housing situation is becoming untenable for working Washingtonians?
Well, I think, recognize that capitalism is the motive for so many people. They're going to make as much money as they possibly can. And this is an instance almost like the grocery stores where, I'm proposing to invest in putting grocery stores into our communities. We've got to continue to put money into being able to preserve the housing that exists and to be able to modernize the housing that exists and build new housing. We've got to be able to do that, and we've got to be able to make those opportunities available to people who want to stay in the District of Columbia. And if we don't, people will be living, excuse me for saying this, but a lot of people will be living in Ward 9. Because they won't be able to live in the District of Columbia in either 1 through 3 or 1 through 8.
Well, there's that. I will not mention that to Angela also Brooks. But, yeah. she does not like that term. But I want to talk to you about Jack Evans. Of course, he stepped down because of the investigation, the corruption investigation. But as soon as he stepped down from his seat, he turned right back around and said that he wants to run for his seat again. How do you feel about this?
I don't like it at all. I don't like that he's doing that. I've known Jack Evans for a very, very long time. I worked closely with him on many issues. I worked with him on the sports wagering effort that has come to the District of Columbia now. And I was able to get him to agree that, if he wanted me to support what he was trying to do, 50% of the money coming to the District of Columbia would have to go to an initiative that's so important to me, and that is to support developmental educational services for our very youngest children, those who are under 3, 0, birth to 3. And he had agreed to that. But I think having read the report, having seen the report that was the investigation that was conducted by the law firm that did it, it's a very compelling case. I mean, there are like 11 different violations, ethical violations in there. And I just don't think he should do that at this stage.
Have you spoken to him?
Yes.
Since what has he said? Have you had a conversation about whether he should or should not try to become reelected to his seat?
He knows how I feel about it, that I think it's a really bad idea. And I just can't even imagine. I haven't talked to a lot of our other colleagues, who've been involved in this too, who voted to expel him. I mean, it was a unanimous vote. Obviously, he didn't vote for it, but
exactly,
yeah. But otherwise, a unanimous vote to expel him from the council. And there were so many people who were just so upset about what had happened. You look at the stuff with Metro. You look at the stuff with running an organization out of his office around reaching out to people and saying he was available to work with them. I hated like heck to see that, but it happened, and there was little debate or dispute about what had happened previously. My situation was analogous, but all you have to do is look at my situation. Now, you well remember that because I was on your show to talk about it.
You talked about it.
And I said at the time, I said, I did nothing. And, of course, ultimately, it was proven. I did nothing. I did absolutely nothing. And, you look at the fact that I essentially lost an election because of the way this was handled by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Both of those guys are gone now. They're not even there anymore. In fact, the U.S. attorney who was appointed by Trump, Jesse Liu,
Yes, yeah. And she has had her own difficulties with the administration of late. Yeah. But your situation, again, is not a Jack Evans situation.
Oh, no. Absolutely not.
And so is it, and without the support, I mean, obviously, all of you answer to the voters. But if he does not have a colleague constituency, to put it frankly, do you think he should just sit down, go away?
Yeah, I think that I'm clear. I'm real clear about that. I've been clear about it from the time that he talked about running again. And I just don't think it's a good idea at all. I mean, you got to ask yourself when you run for these offices, who are you going to influence on the council? Who are you going to influence to be able to get things done? You know, we are a collegial body. And at the end of the day, you got to be able to get six more votes in addition to your own to be able to have any impact on any legislation at all. I don't see it happening.
I do want to talk a little bit about, you know, gun violence. Again, another issue in the district that impacts everyone in the city. This isn't the bad old days of Dodge City, but there is still concern about the kind of deadly violence that we're seeing in the district. The mayor talks about getting guns off the street. Okay. But what else can be done to address this issue?
Well, I think getting guns off the street is a huge part of the answer. And because ultimately, I mean, if you've got people with guns on the street, they're likely to use them. When you look at the murder rate, the homicide rate in the District of Columbia, you know, it went up again last year. You look at, we had 161 homicides in the District of Columbia. I'm hopeful, Harold, that in part with a new elected approach in Virginia, that the Democrats there will help to keep this flow of guns, you know, coming into the District of Columbia. Chief Newsom talks about it all the time, that the guns that are being used in some of these crimes, these murders and whatnot, are being smuggled in from places like Virginia. I'm hopeful that a new approach politically there will have an impact on that continued bringing of weaponry into the District of Columbia.
Well, with just this earlier this week, with the assault weapons ban dying in a Senate committee during the Virginia legislative session, do you think that that is going to hurt the violence issue in the district?
It could. I can't say that with any certainty, but I've got to believe that with a new approach, you know, to recognizing, you know, how people are selling guns across the border into the District of Columbia, that is going to have an impact on people continuing to try to do that. You know, as we apprehend people who are doing that, they should be arrested and prosecuted to the full extent of the law. You know, to the extent that our murder rate is going up because people are sending, you know, guns, selling guns across the border, we need help from our jurisdiction, from our neighbors, from Virginia in particular, and then certainly from Maryland as well, which has been helpful to us in the past. But we've got to recognize we're one region. I mean, how many minutes does it take to go from the District of Columbia to Virginia and then, you know, or to Maryland?
Yeah.
It doesn't take very long at all. And we know people are, you know, they're savvy enough to be able to know that if they've got a weapon that somebody wants and they can sell it, they will work to get away with it.
What about yourself politically? What is your future politically? You want to stay in Ward 7? Are you going to run for mayor again? I'm sure you've had time, as we all do, to do some navel gazing and figure out, you know, what's ahead for us.
Well, I don't know that I have any decisions on what that future will be. I know right now, Harold, I'm running for reelection to Ward 7. I want to continue to serve the people of Ward 7. I've enjoyed being back working, you know, in the council. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy being the mayor. I don't have any questions about that, or being the chairman of the council. But I thoroughly enjoy serving people, doing things to help people get to a better place, like the hospital that Ray was talking about a little earlier, or doing the grocery stores that I know will improve the quality of life for so many people in Ward 7 and Ward 8. So right now what I'm focused on is being able to do as much as I possibly can in the public service role to help people. It's all I've ever wanted to do. It's all I've ever done, frankly. And that's why I was so hurtful what I went through, you know, what I was accused of, that obviously at the end of the day they had nothing. Mm-hmm. And pulled that press conference stunt 1 week before early voting started and just pulled the bottom out from under. Because we were up, Harold, and you and I have talked about it. I was up anywhere from 5 to 13 points 1 week before early voting started. And I don't know whether we would have won or not, but that's a pretty compelling case to make.
Mm. Well, politics is a sharp elbows business, and you know that better than I. Ward 7 Council Member Vincent Gray, good to see you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for coming in and talking to us, and certainly good luck on this food desert issue. I think that's something that everyone can agree needs to be done for communities that are underserved. So thank you again. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Harold. It's like talking about housing.
Yes.
If we want to do the housing, let's make sure that we have places for people to go shop for groceries as well. Let's put the opportunities in front of people that they can take full advantage of.
There you go. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141, for this Thursday, February 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.